All right. Good morning, everyone. Let's begin. No, I did Lamed Zayin last. I'm supposed to go back to Lamed Vav. That's what I'm supposed to do. All right. Good morning, everyone. So we're going to do something just a little bit different, being that this is our last shiur before Pesach. So I thought maybe just to spend a few moments on an interesting concept on the Haggadah. I tried to figure out how to relate it back to Tehillim. There's absolutely no way, except that it's all Torah. So I figure that's a pretty loose connection, but a good one nevertheless. So I want to share with you, really not as much focusing on a particular section of the Haggadah, or a particular piece of the Haggadah, so this is not as much a Dvar Torah, as much as it is focusing on one of the thematic overtones of the Haggadah. So take a look at number one. So the Mishnah in Maseches Pesachim says, Mazgulo Kosheni. They pour the second cup of the four cups, V'kana ben Shoal es Aviv, and again here the child asks the father the Manashtana, Vim ein das beben Aviv malamdo Manashtana halayla zame kol halelos. Fine. Maschil biginus umisayim b'shevach. So the Gemara says that the Pesach Seder, you know, it's interesting, because sometimes when you look at the Haggadah sometimes looks a little bit random, but in reality it's not random at all. Every single piece is part of a particular Seder, and the Mishnah explains that the framework of the Seder is maschil beginus. We begin, you know, ginus is a hard word to define. So we call it maybe degradation or the not as nice parts. I don't know if maybe there's a better English word. But we begin with the ginus, we begin with the degradation, the low points, umesayim b'shevach, and we end with praise. So if you skip down to number two, so the Gemara says, what does this mean? Maschil beginus umesayim b'shevach. My beginus, what does it mean we begin the Seder, we begin Magid, with ginus, with the degradation of the Jewish people? Rav Amar Rav says, Mitchila ovdei avodas gilulim hayu avosenu, uShmuel amar avadim hayinu. See, interestingly enough, dispute between Rav and Shmuel as to what degradation we begin with. So Rav says we begin by speaking about the degradation mitchila ovdei avodas zara hayu avosenu. In the beginning, our forefathers were idolaters. Who does that refer to? In the beginning, our forefathers were idolaters. Avram Avinu. So we'll come back, because remember, Terach is not considered to be our forefather. Avram Avinu is our forefather. He's the first of the Avos. So we'll discuss that in a little bit more in depth. So Rav says, we begin mitchila ovdei avodah zarah, although some explain that it refers to the Jews in Egypt as well. So there's a lot of dispute. And Shmuel says, no, we begin the gnus. What's the degradation? Avadim hayinu. We were slaves in Egypt. And if you could notice in number three, so I cut and pasted a few over here from the Haggadah. So if you notice, we do both. Now, in reality, Avodim Hayinu comes before Mitchila Ovdei Avodah Zarah Hayu Avosenu. But interestingly enough, we have put both pieces in the Haggadah. So we speak about the Ginus, the degradation, that once upon a time we were idolaters, that once upon a time we were physical slaves, actual slaves, and we speak about the degradation that once upon a time we were idolaters. Take a look at number four. So here I quoted to you from the Haggadah of Rav Yisrael Meir Las. Rabbi Lau, of course, was the former chief rabbi of Israel. This is not the current Rabbi Lau. That's Rabbi David Lau, Rabbi Yisrael Meir's son. So Rabbi Yisrael Meir Lau is the former chief rabbi of Israel, now the current chief rabbi of Tel Aviv. So he wrote a beautiful perush on the Haggadah called Yachel Yisrael. All of Rabbi Lau's works are titled under Yachel Yisrael. There's a Shailos Tshuvas Yachel Yisrael. So on the Haggadah, he wrote a beautiful perush. He writes, Mahin ha-ginus v'ha-shevach. What does this mean, ginus and shevach? Nechleku b'kach Rav u'Shmuel b'gimara. So Rav and Shmuel have a dispute in the Talmud. L'das Rav, yesh lomar mitchila ovdei avodah zarah hayu avosenu, va'achshav kervanu hamakom l'avodas. According to Rav, so the ginus, the degradation that we speak about in the Haggadah, is that in the beginning, we were idolaters, and now HaKadosh Baruch Hu brought us close to his service. Ve'ilu l'das Shmuel, yesh lomar avadim hayinu lepar b'mitzrayim, v'yotzi'inu Hashem alokinu misham b'yad chazaka b'zroon etuya. So remember, Rav and Shmuel have this dispute. According to Rav, the ginus is that once upon a time we were idolaters, but what's the shevach, what's the praise? The praise is that Baruch Hashem, now we are not. Now we serve God. According to Shmuel, the ginus, the degradation, is we were servants to Pharaoh, and now the shevach, the praise is now we are servants of God. Kilomar, so Rabbi Lau says, you know, whenever you see a dispute in the Talmud. So we always try to figure out what is at the core of their dispute. What is it really that they are arguing about? Meaning, what is the point of contention? Kilomar, Rav Sover, Shiesh Lahadgish es Tzad HaTorani, Shemetchila Hayu Avosenu Ov De Avodah Zarah, Ukineged Ze Kervanu Hamakom Lavodaso. So really what they're actually disputing is, remember, what is it? What's the goal of the Seder night? What's the goal? Tell the story. Good. What else is the goal? Good. What's the real goal? Chayiv Adam Liros es Atzmo Ki'ilu Hu Yatsa Mimitzrayim. The goal of the Seder night, meaning, I'm impressed with you group of ladies, because most often people say the goal is to remain awake. So that is true. That is a very important goal. But if you're able to remain awake, the spiritual goal is to be able to feel as if I have been emancipated. In other words, that the goal of the Seder night is to feel and experience freedom. The fundamental question is, what does it mean to be free? And Rabbi Lau suggests that this is, or I should say differently, what aspect of freedom is it that we are stressing on the Leil HaSeder? What is it that we're stressing on Pesach night? So Rabbi Lau suggests that this is the fundamental dispute between Rav and Shmuel. Rav holds that the real freedom we celebrate on the Seder night is what type of freedom? Spiritual freedom. And that's why we say, Mitrila of the Avodah Zarah Havasenu. Our ancestors were once idolaters. But now look how much we have grown. Look how much we have progressed. Tonight, we primarily celebrate our spiritual freedom. On the other hand, V'ilu Shmuel Sover, Sheesh Lahadgis Esat Sar Ha'enoshi. Shmuel, on the other hand, says, no, interestingly enough, the stress of tonight, the focus of tonight, is actually not as much on spiritual emancipation as much as it is on physical emancipation. Shemetchila hayinu avodim lemitzrayim, ukineged ze yatzanu lecheirus. So the fundamental dispute between Rav and Shmuel is what aspect of freedom is center stage on this night of the Seder. According to Rav, we're focusing on spiritual freedom. We once were spiritually enslaved. We were idolaters. Now we are a free spiritual people to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And Shmuel says, no, we focus on the Cheiros HaGashmi, physical emancipation, physical freedom. Once we were slaves to Pharaoh, and now literally we are free. V'hinei ba'omrenu es ha'agadosh shel Pesach. So now, who do we paskin like? So, right, who do we hold? So what is the ikar of the Leil HaSeder? What would you say? Both. Interestingly enough, Rabbi Lau writes, V'hinei ba'omrenu es ha'agadosh shel Pesach. On a megalim ki a emes hi kishnehem elu vi elu divrei elokim chayim ushniak atoim neemaran ba'agada. That's why, again, if you go back to number 3, that's why Zirox did for you. We in fact say both pieces. We in fact go ahead and indicate that tonight on the Leil HaSeder, or on the night of the Seder, we celebrate our spiritual emancipation. We celebrate our physical emancipation. Just as an aside, well, actually, just take a look at number 5. So here's also another beautiful Haggadah. You know, it's amazing. Every year, there are always new Haggadahs that come out. There are always, it just shows you, by the way, that we're so privileged not just to have a Torah, but now you understand why it's also called the Torah's Chaim, right? Why it's called the Eitz Chaim Hi L'machazikim Ba, because the same way that a tree always sprouts new branches, it's amazing that there are always additional dimensions of understanding. You would have thought that by now, thousands of years after our seeing, we pretty much like would have gotten a handle on everything that there is to talk about Torah. But amazingly enough, there's always something new. And it's the most incredible and exciting part about our Judaism, that we're part of something vibrant, dynamic, and living that is constantly evolving, constantly growing. So this happens to be a beautiful Haggadah that came out a couple of years ago, written by Rabbi Menachem Ginnack. And Rabbi Ginnack tried to really focus on the Torah of Rav Soloveitchik. The Rav didn't write a commentary on the Haggadah. The Rav really wrote very little. The Rav really did not write. I think I've mentioned this in the past. Rav Soloveitchik, it's interesting that there are certain people that every year, like on their yard site, more of their writings come out. So that's amazing. When the Rav was alive, virtually none of his writings were published. Now that he's dead for over 20 years, so again, all of his writings come out. So the Rav was very hesitant to commit anything to writing, because from the Rav's perspective, his thought was always evolving. So the problem is, when you write something, what happens? But it is what it is. So when you write something, that thought becomes static. That's what it is. It's never going, the written word is never going to evolve, never, which by the way, of course, is the power of the written word. That's why writing is, written word is so, because it's there the dore doros. But on the other hand, the Rav felt that his thoughts were always evolving, always changing, so he was always hesitant to commit to writing. So Rabbi Genek wrote a beautiful Haggadah, gathering all of the Rav's thoughts, called An Exalted Evening. See, he writes a very similar idea, number 5. The dispute between Rav and Shmuel might be understood as follows. There are two aspects of slavery, physical and spiritual. In approaching the shameful aspects of slavery, Rav emphasizes a spiritual degradation of enslaved Jews. Shmuel, however, emphasizes the physical degradation of the Jews that resulted from bondage. Bless you. Thus, Rav and Shmuel are each focusing on one of two dimensions of slavery. So Soloveitchik and Rabbi Lau pretty much write the same exact idea. Namely, the fundamental machlokus between Rav and Shmuel is, what is the dominant theme of the evening? Rav says spiritual enslavement, spiritual emancipation. Shmuel says physical enslavement, physical emancipation. How do we paskin? We said like both, we include them. Although, I'll point that it's interesting. Which one is mentioned first in the Haggadah? Avodim Hayinu. Avodim Hayinu, which refers to what? Physical enslavement. So it's interesting. So why is physical enslavement mentioned before spiritual enslavement? So perhaps what the Baal Haggadah is trying to teach us is that sometimes it's very difficult to be ruchni. It's very difficult to be a spiritual being when your physical realities are compromised. Sometimes when there is physical bondage, sometimes when there's physical suffering, a person has to put in, we've discussed this in Tehillim, a person has to put in so much of their kohos just to keeping their head above water, just to survival, that it's hard to keep my head above water and survive while at the same time cultivate the spiritual personality. So it's almost like the Baal Haggadah, as much as we're saying, yes, Rav and Shmuel, you're both right. Tonight, we celebrate our physical emancipation and freedom and our spiritual emancipation and freedom, but yet at the end of the day, first, we discuss physical emancipation from slavery and servitude, because if we are a physically free people, we have the ability to devote more of our internal and emotional resources to cultivating a spiritual identity. It was a question.
Yeah, I was just curious if you're wondering if Shmuel did that because of the times in which he lived in. When did Shmuel live?
Rav and Shmuel were contemporaries.
Oh, they were
contemporaries, correct. So no, I don't know that. We always assume that people are always, their thinking is always shaped by the times in which they live, but it doesn't seem to be anything specific that's happening in Rav and Shmuel's time that causes them to go in different directions. So let's analyze this a little bit more. So now that we understand what's really unfolding over here, so when the Gemara says, Maschil beginus umesayim b'shevach, what the Gemara is using over here, the Gemara is using a model, almost like a stylistic model, to get us to be able to tap in to the essence of the Leil HaSeder in order to allow us to understand what true freedom means. So again, Rav will say that true freedom means spiritual freedom. Shmuel will say that true freedom means physical freedom. We say we celebrate both types of freedom, but let's also take this a little bit further. Meaning, why is it that the Baal Haggadah, that whoever, and again, that Haggadah, understand also, the Haggadah wasn't all written at one point in time. First of all, we know that the majority of the Haggadah is written after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. That there were certain things that were said during even the times of the Beis HaMikdash. For example, there was Manashtana, even during the times of the Beis HaMikdash, different Manashtana than what we have. But the majority of the Haggadah was written after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, with different things coming in different times. For example, again, Chagadya was added in much later on. And we don't just know that because it's at the end of the Haggadah. We also know it because, again, each step of Chagadya refers to different stages of Galus, different stages of diaspora. So we know that was added on later on historically. But there's no question that the Baal Haggadah chose this framework of Maschil Beginus Umesayim B'Shevach. Begin with the low points. And by the way, what's interesting to note is it's not just the idea of Maschil Beginus Umesayim B'Shevach within one sentence. Like Mitchila Ov De'Avodah Zarah Havasinu, our ancestors were idolaters and now we're not. Because that's immediate Genus and Shevach juxtaposed. But if you look at the Haggadah as a whole, the Haggadah begins with an emphasis on slavery and servitude, spiritual and physical. And by the end of the Haggadah, what are we focusing on? Like the first Seder for everybody, right? So, messianic redemption, Right? Remember, again, the Seder is a continuum. It begins by focusing on what happened in Egypt, then ultimately, again, so it begins with the past, brings the past into the present. Present paves the way for the future, messianic redemption. That's why, again, the whole second part of the Seder begins with the Kol Shel Eliyahu, which Eliyahu HaNavi, of course, is, again, the messenger who announces messianic arrival. And the end of the Seder is all about Moshiach. It's all about messianic redemption. So let's try to understand a little bit more as to what this framework of Maschil Beginus Umesayim B'Shevach, beginning with degradation, ending with praise, actually. Let's take a look at number 6. So I'm going to share with you a couple of different approaches. So this is from a Sefer HaRei Kedem, written by Rav Shurkin. And Rav Shurkin writes the following. He says, Ulefi zeh, nira diyesot hadin, de Maschil Beginus Umesayim B'Shevach, eino mehilcho siperit yas Yisrael. So Rav Shurkin suggests that this idea of beginning with degradation and ultimately ending with praise or ending on a high point, it's not unique to the retelling of the Exodus story. Elahu din klali b'chol makom sheyesh chovas hoda. Wherever there's an obligation to thank God, we always begin with the low point, and then we go ahead and we end off with the high point. Sheyesh chiv shel maschil beginus. He says, "Ukemo beparshas bikurim shumekar hadin de maschil beginus da hasam yisod chiyuv ameras aparsh kshemevi bikurim hu chiyuv hoda laHashem v'seder haodam." I'm just going to read two sentences, then we'll stop. Hu aydei shemaschil beginus umesayim b'shevach hachenami hachenami b'leil Pesach sheish chovas hoda laHashem. It's interesting enough. The Harry Kedner of Shurkin writes that the concept of maschil beginus umesayim b'shevach is always a din of hoda. Whenever you're giving thanks to God, we first begin by talking about where we were, meaning the bad times, and then we go ahead and we transition into the good times. And interestingly enough, this always bothered me. You look in your Haggadah, so you'll notice that a good part of Magid actually comes from number 7, from Chumash Devarim, the section of Mikra Bikurim. When you bring your first fruits, to the Beis Hamikdash, so you don't just drop off the fruits and go home. There's a whole Amir, bless you, there's a whole recitation that one is supposed to make. That recitation actually is a little bit of a crash course on Jewish history. Right? Kadosh Baruch Hu, once upon a time we were idolaters, we were in Egypt, we were afflicted, we were burdened, then you took us out, you brought us to Eretz Yisrael, and look, I'm here today bringing my first fruit. This actually becomes a major, this is a major section of the Haggadah, of the Magid section of the Haggadah. I always wondered, why is that here? Why is it that we take the Magid section from Bikurim as opposed to taking the Magid section from Shmos? What we do, we take a little bit from Shmos, but the majority comes from here. Rav Shurkin would suggest because Bikurim gives us the model as to how to give thanks to God. Bikurim tells us that whenever you give thanks to God, what do you have to do? You have to begin by discussing the low points. You have to begin by discussing, again, the difficult times. And then you give thanks to HaKadosh Baruch Hu that He brought you out of those difficult times and brought you to where you are now. Therefore, on the night of the Seder, remember, what's the goal of the Seder? Good. What's the other goal of the Seder? I gave you that one already, right? I told you already. So I'm not going to lob you another one like that. What's the second goal of the Seder? If after I experience freedom, what else am I supposed to do? What do we say at the end of Magid? Lefichach anachnu chayovim, lehodos. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we are obligated to give thanks to you. So yes, I'm supposed to re-experience freedom. But it's not just enough to re-experience. I must give thanks. I must express my gratitude that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you have given me this newfound freedom. When you give thanks to God, divine thanks follows a particular paradigm. What's the paradigm? Maschil beginus umesayim b'shevach. Therefore, Rav Shurkin would suggest that you can't really ask on the Haggadah why the Haggadah follows this model of Maschil Beginus Umesayim B'Shevach, beginning with degradation, ending with high points. Why? Because it's not a din, it's not unique to the Haggadah, it's the framework of Shevach V'Odah. It's the way we give thanks to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that ultimately we begin with the low points and with the high points. So again, according to Rav Shurkin then, there's no great insight into the Haggadah. The Haggadah is just establishing a paradigm as already created in the Torah whenever you give thanks to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Take a look at number 8. The Maharsha takes a different approach. The Maharsha says no. Maschil Beginus Umesayim B'Shevach is very important for a different reason. He says in number 8, Maschil Beginus Umesayim, Inyano Shebeyom Simchas Libo Shel Adam, Yiskar Tchilas Shifluso Ugnuso Shelo tazuach da'ato alav. So the Maharsha says like this. There is an inherent danger in the Leil HaSeder. What's the inherent danger? What's the inherent danger? That now I'm free. And remember, you know, there's an interesting halacha. The halacha is that through Mishnah Berurah brings down, Shulchan Aruch brings down, that throughout the entire year, a person is never supposed to use all of their finest objects. Let's say I have a lot of silver. I'm not supposed to use all of my silver, even on Shabbos and Yontiv. Why not? Zecher l'Churban. The idea is that because you have a Beis HaMikdash, you always hold back a little bit. There is one time throughout the year where you're permitted and even encouraged to use all of your finest items, and that's when? Pesach. Why? Because I'm a Ben Chorin, I'm free, and it's a behavioral manifestation of my newfound freedom. Look at the quote-unquote wealth that I have. Remember, again, a slave can't own anything, and therefore I'm going to go ahead and use my show that I own all of these possessions. So we do so, that's why we recline, even though for us it's a little bit unnatural, but we recline, again, as a behavioral manifestation of freedom. So the Maharsha says there's a danger, because all of it could what? All of it can go to my head a little bit. I'm free, I'm free, I'm free, I'm great, I'm wonderful, I'm special. It can easy to get carried away with it. And therefore, says the Maharsha, what do we do? Umehai taima doresh nami me'arami oved avi. So what do we do? What's the best way to keep someone humble? What's the best way to keep ourselves humble? Don't keep anyone else humble. We should keep ourselves humble. What's the best way to keep myself humble? Remember your background. Remember your past. Remember where you came from. Now, what does that mean? Because the truth is, everybody has some skeletons in the closet, right? Everybody has those periods of life or those actions or those events that they're not so proud of. So just remember that stuff, and it keeps you humble. By the way, just so you should understand, this helps to answer a very interesting question. You know, you ever wonder, I think we mentioned this in the past, you ever wonder, you know, Malchus Yehuda, the monarchy, comes from who? From Yehuda. With who? With Tamar. So you know, remember that story in Bereishis that we try, right? Thank God many of the schools just glance over it, so we're not put in the awkward position of having to review it with our sons and daughters. But it's a parasha that we read all of the time. Remember, again, the one where Yehuda thinks that Tamar is a harlot, and he has relations with her, impregnates her, and then ultimately only finds out after she's about to be executed for immorality. That is, you ever wonder to yourself, why exactly the Ribono Shel Olam decided that monarchy, right, Davidic line, the Melech HaMashiach comes from a union between a man and a woman he thought was a harlot. Why? So the Maharal of Prague says it's a very simple cheshbon. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to keep the monarchy humble. What is the best way to keep the king humble? Oh, king, you're getting all excited about yourself? Why don't you come here? Maybe you could explain this story to me in Bereishis, right? Let's read about your Babi and your Zayda exactly a little bit and what happened over here. So says the Maharal, it keeps kings humble. So says the Maharsha, on this night when it's all about freedom and that newfound freedom, that newfound chayrus could sometimes go to one's head, what do we do? Don't get so carried away with yourself, because understand, we come from very noble and humble, very humble beginnings. We ultimately descend from idolaters. So because I know that I come from that beginning, therefore I must be careful and not allow my newfound freedom to go to my head. Interestingly enough, if you look at number 9, so the Taz writes, Ela Dinira, this is actually very interesting, Tetam Levisha Sakito. Oh, thank you very much. Thank you, it's very sweet, thank you. Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu Melech Olam Shakom Yeh Bidvaro. Thank you. I'm gonna put this here, that's okay. So the Taz writes, you know, many have accustomed to wear a kittel at the Seder. So why do we wear a kittel? The Tam Levisha Sa Kittel. Now, again, the reason that's understood by most is because the kittel is supposed to represent the white garment, which again is supposed to represent nobility, aristocracy. The Taz says no. The Taz says, you know what the kittel represents? The kittel is supposed to represent tachrichim, supposed to represent burial shrouds. Shelo tazuach daito alav mipnei hasimcha. So what happens? On this night, when we are going ahead and celebrating our newfound freedom, in order to keep that freedom in check, in order to keep that ego in check, what do? We wear tachrichim. We wear the burial shrouds. Al kin yilbash beged mesim. Ulefi zeh gam ha'avel b'shinah. So I just want to point out something very interesting. There are different communities have different customs, but throughout the ages, there were communities where the custom was that everyone at the Seder wore a kittel-like garment, which is very interesting because if you think about this logic of the Taz, it makes a lot of sense. The goal is for everyone to be humbled. Yes, I have this newfound freedom. Yes, I'm a Ben Chorin, but how do I keep myself really well? Nothing keeps a person humble like death, like the knowledge that ultimately life comes to an end at some point in time. Therefore, says the Taz, that's the point of the Kittel. So again, so the second approach to understanding Maschil Begnus Messiah B'Shavach is because it makes sure that our newfound freedom does not get too carried away. We remain humbled and rooted again in our very humble beginnings. Take a look at number 10. So Rabbi Ginnak again writes to me, another very beautiful idea. He says, in the ancient world, in the ancient world, other nations usually explain their origins as the product of a love affair between a god and a human. These nations of people viewed themselves as descendants of God, princes of kings, right? So if you look at Greek mythology, so Greek mythology is all about these great people who descended from some union, some strange illicit union between a god and a mortal. Rabbi Ginnak writes, again, is quoting the Rav, this is not the story of Judaism. On the night of Pesach, listen to how beautiful this is, the night of the election of Israel as the covenantal nation, we say that our election is not because we have distinguished ourselves. At first, our ancestors were idolaters, we declare, and we would have remained idolaters and pagans had not God brought us close to his service. We are of humble origin. Our ancestors were simple idol worshippers. The fact that we are the people who brought the world monotheism, a new morality, and a new set of spiritual values is not due to our efforts or to our greatness. God came to us and invited us to join him. The initiative belonged to him. Our greatness came because of a special act of grace on the part of the Almighty. He could have elected any of the 70 nations, but as an act of chesed, he chose us. We did not display the characteristics that would have qualified us for the honor of being selected as God's people, the Amah Nivchar, a covenantal community. We are undeserving and unworthy. Our Torah is very much concerned with gratitude. Therefore, on Pesach night, even before we begin to tell the story of the Exodus, we express our indebtedness to the Almighty. We are indebted not only for the miracles which happened later, but also for the very fact that he called us into his service. So what a beautiful idea this is. So writes of Soloveitchik, Rabbi Ginnak, quoting of Soloveitchik, that what are we doing when we say, Mitchila Ovdei Avodah Zarah Hayu Avaseinu? You know, we say to ourselves, you know, sometimes we get a little bit overwhelmed by what Judaism expects of us, and we forget that to be a Jew is the greatest privilege could possibly be visited on a person in this world. There is no greater privilege. There is no greater opportunity than to be a part of the Jewish nation. There are many things that you could argue with, that one you can't argue with. Sometimes it might feel like a little bit more of a yoke than a privilege. It's understandable at times, but in reality, there is no greater privilege than being part of the Am HaNivchar, than being part of the chosen nation. And Rav Soloveitchik writes so beautifully that on Leil HaSeder, we have to take the opportunity to thank the Ribono Shel Olam. So how do we thank the Ribono Shel Olam? Mitchila Ov De Avodah Zarah Hayu Avaseinu. Ribono Shel Olam, you know, at the end of the day, we didn't necessarily warrant to be selected. We came from idolaters, much like any other idolater. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you chose us, and we thank you for that. So says the Rav, that on the night of the Seder, before we talk about the miracles, and before we talk about emancipation, and before we talk about all the things that God has done for us, we take a moment to pause and reflect. Thank you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, for choosing us. Thank you for selecting us. Thank you for giving us the privilege to partner with you, to contribute to humanity, to shape the world, and to infuse light into an otherwise dark existence. Thank you for that privilege. That says the Rav, that's the whole idea of Maschil Beginus U'Mesayim Shav. So what does the Ginus show? The Ginus show, the truth is, on our own, we weren't necessarily so deserving. Meaning, you can make the argument that an Avraham Avinu was deserving, but the truth is, as a nation, remember, what were we in Egypt? What were we in Egypt? So we were nothing to write home about in Egypt. That's the honest to goodness truth. Remember, again, you know, the Medrash writes, the only reason we were redeemed is because if we weren't redeemed, we would have simply faded away into oblivion. And the truth is, all you need to do is to look at our ancestors' behavior throughout their time in the desert. It was deplorable. Again, we're no one to stand in judgment of them because we didn't live their life circumstances. But it's ridiculous, the way they treated Moshe Rabbeinu, the Cheta Egel, the Cheta Meraglim, all this stuff is craziness. And the truth is, if you look on paper, should the Jewish people have been chosen to be the Am HaNivchar? I mean, again, Baruch Hashem, over the years, we've demonstrated an incredible amount of spiritual resiliency and commitment to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but when you look at our beginnings, we were not all that great. So why were we chosen? And says the Rav, that was a chesed of the Ribono Shel Olam. That was an act of kindness on the part of God. And therefore, at the beginning of the Leil HaSeder, before we get into the, you know, the kishkas of redemption and emancipation and freedom, we were slaves spiritually, physically, we weren't worthy, but yet you chose us. And this is very important. And I think sometimes, you know, the whole point of the Leil HaSeder is that we are supposed to tell over specifically to our children, grandchildren, about not just Pesach, but about what it means to be a Jew. And I think that sometimes this piece is left out of chinuch. Sometimes we're very good at telling our children what they have to do or what they can't do. But we forget to tell them that they are privileged, or to teach them. It's not just enough to tell them, you know, like most things in parenting, it's never enough to tell your child. You have to model it for your child. So if a parent is looking for every single kula in the book because they don't want to have to do, or a parent feels burdened and a parent shows that burden, or, you know, again, and there are simple things, like, you know, the way a person starts Shabbos. A person runs in the 18 minutes, that says something about your Shabbos. I'm not saying a person has to be a chatzos lady. Halavai, we should all be zocha. I'd like to be a chatzos lady one day. But but the point is, we communicate these things to our children about how we feel about our Yiddishkeit by the way we relate. And at the end of the day, if I feel burdened, I could tell my child, you should be a good Jew, you could be this. They'll say, why? You feel it's a burden. Nobody wants a burden. If you feel it's a burden, then why should I love it? But if we communicate to our children through deed and through word that it's a privilege. Privilege doesn't mean it's easy. Privilege doesn't mean it doesn't come without sacrifice, and sometimes it's not exceptionally difficult, but it's a privilege. So the Rav says, this is the first part of the Higadat Labincha. The first part of the Chinuch experience of the Leil HaSeder is, my dear child, before I tell you about all the miracles and all the wonderful things, I need to tell you a very important message. It's a privilege to be a Jew. It's a privilege to be part of Am Yisrael. We're not an easy people. We're very often a difficult people. Sometimes we have difficulty, you know, we have, sometimes we're a little bit of like, not just a family, but a dysfunctional family. But you know, the beautiful part is, family is still family, no matter how dysfunctional it may be. And it's a privilege to be a part of that family. Mitrila of the Avodah Zarah, we were chosen out of the chesed, and to this day, every single day when I wake up and I say, Mo da'ani HaKadosh Baruch Hu, thank you for giving me not just another day of life, but another day of life as a Jew, as a member of the Jewish nation, there is nothing else I would ever want in life. That's the first thing we give our children on the Leil HaSeder. Maskel Beginus Mesayim B'Shalach. Let's go on a little bit. I want to accomplish a lot today. Take a look at number 11. Here we have another piece, another beautiful piece by Rabbi Lau. So Rabbi Lau writes, he says, the Mishnah Ne'emar, again, remember, we're just taking different approaches to understanding the concept of Maschil Beginus Mesayim B'Shabach. This is the framework for the entire Seder. We're trying to figure out why the Baal HaGadol was so fixated on this framework. So Rabbi Lau writes, Mishnah Ne'emar, Ki Mitzvos V'Higadot L'Bincha Na'asis Ba'Ofen Shel Maschil Beginus Mesayim B'Shabach. So fine, so meaning the way we transmit the entire Seder, the entire essence to children, to others, is through this framework of starting with Genus, starting with the negativity, and ending with Shavach. E'asher lehistapik b'Shavach, Kuri writes, below the Saper Gamal Genus. It is impossible to discuss the Shavach, the good things, the praises, the accomplishments, without speaking about the negativity. Kimfi sha'anu lokchim balayla hazeh, lo rak matzah ki imaror. The same way that, at least according to Hillel, the way to fulfill the mitzvah matzah was how? To take matzah together with mar, together with Karban Pesach. Mi she'eno makir es ha-maror, lo yada laharich es arka shalamatzah. Because if you don't understand the maror, you can't appreciate the matzah. Umishalo mevin mahu shibud lo yodea mashmuusa shacherus. Whoever doesn't understand servitude cannot appreciate freedom. Me'inyon. So actually, let's leave the rest. Rabbi Lau says something absolutely amazing. Rabbi Lau says, do you know why we begin Maschil Beginus Messiah B'Shevach? Why do I have to start Avada Mayinu, Metchila of the Avada Zara? Because the only way you could truly appreciate something is how? Through what? One word. Contrast. You need contrast. The only way you could appreciate light is if there's darkness. The only way I could appreciate freedom is if I understand what servitude really is. And if I can't understand it because of my own life experience, at least to recreate it through the Haggadah. So Rabbi Lau says something amazing. Rabbi Lau says, the truth is, you might be tempted just to skip right to the redemptive part of the story. Right? Just skip to the fact that we're free, skip to the miracles, skip to the fact that we're now a spiritual people. But how can you appreciate the fact that we're free now if I don't spend a little bit of time focusing on the fact that we were slaves? How could I appreciate the beautiful individual and collective neshamas that we have now if I don't spend a little bit of time focusing on the fact of mitchila ovde avodazara hayu avosenu? In other words, says Rabbi Lau, the entire essence of maschil beginus umesayim b'shavach, beginning with the degradation, ending with the high points, is to create contrast. And without contrast, a person can't appreciate the beautiful miracles of the evening, which we know this even in our personal lives. That the truth is, what kind of person, when you accomplish something, so what amplifies your wonderful feelings about your accomplishment? Let me say that differently. A person accomplishes something good in life, so you feel good about yourself. But you feel even better if what? Someone notices it was a struggle, or you've had past failures. Right? If I failed before in life and now I accomplished something, this present accomplishment is so much sweeter because I know the bitter taste of defeat. I know what it means to fail. So now when I accomplish, again, accomplishment is always wonderful, but a person is always accomplished, a person never suffered failure, they can't rejoice as much in their accomplishments. But if I failed and if I've fallen and now I accomplish, it's so sweet. So says Rabbi Lau, that's the idea. Obviously, we're not going to feel necessarily the shackles of Egyptian servitude, but at least speaking about it, at least trying to understand it, trying to appreciate it, trying to understand what the mitzvim did to our ancestors and how there was an existential threat to just, you understand what it means. When it, you know, we read it as a historical story, but if you think about it, when Paro says, Kol abein hayilot hayora tashlichu, how the river Nile, the Nile River, was clogged with Jewish babies. What that means and what that meant to our people to understand where we were and yet to understand where we are, that gives us such a greater appreciation ultimately of our heroes. Yes?
I'm just thinking that there's got to be some sort of seed in here of the idea of shleimus, something that's bittersweet, that you have dark and light, and to make it as one, make an entire experience cool, that there has to be
100%. So, Bruch Shekivant, that's actually, I was deciding between doing this or doing a different shiur on Korech. That was my Korech shiur. Because that's very, I'm still going to give it next year, so just forget that comment. Right? So, that is a very important sort of taking the negative and taking the positive and bringing it all together, understanding that it's all part of the same continuum experience. Rabbi Lau is saying something a little bit nuanced, different. Rabbi Lau is saying that you really can only appreciate light if you have a frame of reference of darkness. If you don't know darkness, you're going right into light, you'll appreciate the light, but not as much as you could. In number 12, the Malbim pretty much says the same thing, so we're not going to do it inside. Take a look at number 13. So here the Beis Halevi has a beautiful commentary. So he says, so he's focusing over here, Mitrila of the Avalazar Hayavaseinu. So the obvious question is, who are the forefathers that we are referring to? So the Beis Halevi writes, Mikan Raya, the Mashikos of Harambam, Tigam Avram Avinu Avad Mitchila Avodazara Ayin Sham. So interestingly enough, if you remember, there is a fundamental dispute between the Rambam and the Ravid. The Ravid is Rav Avram ben David, who is a commentary on the Rambam, who very often vehemently disagrees with the Rambam. So there's a fundamental dispute between the Rambam and the Ravid as to when Avraham Avinu found God. According to the Ravid, so Avraham Avinu found God at the age of 3. According to the Rambam, Avraham Avinu found God at the age of 40. The age of 40. So the Ravid 3, Rambam 40. So the Beis Halevi writes, from this passage in the Haggadah, it's a clear proof to the Rambam, that obviously Avraham Avinu didn't find God until he was 40. So what was he doing for the first 40 years of his life? What was he doing? What everybody else is doing. He was worshipping idolatry. And he's worshiping idolatry. He wasn't. Remember again, you know, when we think about like an idol worshiper, we think about someone who's evil. Idol worshippers weren't evil. They were just ignorant. They were good people. They were trying to worship God. You know, the Chazon Ish writes, he says that people often think, you know, the Gemara says that Chazal davened for the Yetzar, for the desire for idolatry to be removed from the world. That's why we don't have the same desire to go and worship idols. So the Chazon Ish says that people often think that we're on a greater level today because we don't have a desire to worship idolatry. The Chazon Ish is absolutely wrong. They were on a higher level. Why? Because at least people had a desire to connect to something bigger than themselves. It's true. It was the wrong direction. They were worshiping the wrong things, but they realized that there was something bigger than themselves. Says the Chazon Ish, that's a milah. That's an incredible spiritual accomplishment, which is very much lacking in today's world. So in any event, the Beis Halevi writes that this passage is a proof to the Rambam that Avraham Avinu worshipped idolatry until he was 40. Demakavana al Terach, because if it was referring to Terach, says the Beis Halevi, Mahu Lashon Shal Avoseinu. Terach is not one of our forefathers. That's not what Terach is. Omnom, Mea Pasuk Shemevi Terach Avi Avraham, Mashman Lechor Dakavana al Terach. Ach Kashal Omer came Vitzarach, Litchok Mea Pasuk. Fine. So Beis Halevi is something like this. Beis Halevi says that Mitchila Ov De Avodah Zarah Avoseinu, in the beginning, our forefathers were idolaters. The forefather is a reference to Avraham Avinu. That before Avram became the great Avram of, you know, the great father of the Jewish people, he was a simple idolater. Now take a look at number 14. And this is such a beautiful and sweet idea. So the Magid of Koznitz, Rabbi Yisrael Hapshtin, says the following. Mitchila ov de avodah zara. Get ready for this. Get ready for this. Pirish. Lo yomar ha'adam hoil v'ha'ra'os yes ma'asayat heina. Ein liod shum takon liskayv Hashem Yisbarach. So the Magid writes that a person could sometimes think, look how much I've corrupted myself, right? I've spent my life living a certain way, and it's too late for me. There is no way for me to become any better, or it's no way for me to become really close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Magid of Koznitz writes, a person, even if I have not lived my life until now in the right way, I have to strengthen myself, pull myself together, get my act together, and live the way I know I need to live. V'yomar belibo. So how do you give yourself chizuk? Look what he writes. Halo mitchila ov de avodah zarah hayu avoseinu. V'af al pikein kervanu hamakom la'avodaso. V'ein lecha davar she'omed bifnei ha'tshuva u'bizchusa nigal b'nei Yisrael. So the Magid says, if a person ever needs to be mechazik themselves, so you only need to say to yourself one line. What's the one line? Mitchila ovdei avodah zara hayu avoseinu. And they begin, now again, remember, combine this. Who are we referring to, according to the Beis Halevi? Who are we referring to? Avraham Avinu. So if Avraham Avinu spent the first 40 years of his life worshipping idolatry, at the age of 40, he was a late bloomer, right? At the age of 40, see, he went ahead and he woke up to the reality of monotheism, and he made of himself something so special, something so significant, then what does that mean? There's hope for me also. It's never too late. Mitchila also says, so if you bring this together, what's really happening over here is something quite beautiful. That really, remember, one of the underlying, this is not really our primary topic, but one of the underlying themes in the Haggadah is one of the underlying themes in Pesach, is the same way that we go ahead and we celebrate our emancipation from Egypt, and we celebrate our emancipation from all the different influences, we also celebrate the ability for personal emancipation. Each of us are shackled by something. Each of us is enslaved to something. Each of us has circumstances that hold us back. Sometimes we allow those circumstances to occur. Sometimes there's circumstances beyond our control, but we all have some type of servitude. So writes the Magid of Koznitz together with the Beis Halevi, we remind ourselves in Pesach that what? Not only do I celebrate historical freedom, but I also realize that I have to try to find my personal freedom as well. My own personal spiritual redemption. Unless you think that it's too late, Mitchila Ov de Avodah Zarah Avosenu. Avraham Avinu was 40 years old, spent the first four decades of his life living a lifestyle antithetical to monotheism. But yet what? He got himself together, he turned himself around. So if we bring this together, the Beis Levi, the Maggid of Koshnitz, would both say, Maschil Beginus Umesayim Beshevach, beginning with degradation, ending with praise, is not just important for the retelling of the Exodus narrative, but it's important for the personal narrative. It's important for my own story. Because in my own story, I'm also enslaved. I'm also shackled by certain things. Now remember, we have to recognize there are certain realities from which you cannot extricate yourself. There are certain things that you cannot transcend. They are what they are. But every person has the opportunity and ability to maximize their circumstances. I may not be able to change my circumstances, but absolutely can maximize whatever circumstances I have. Therefore, says the Maggid of Koshnitz, we're being mechazek ourselves. It's not just that Maschil Beginus Umesayim Beshevach frames the historical story, it frames the personal story as well. That no matter how enslaved I am, no matter how long I've been in whatever servitude or shackles that I've been enslaved in, I always have the ability to maximize. I always have the ability to transcend. And it's never too late to start again. Let me show you one last piece, and then we'll just bring everything together. So this piece is from Rabbi Jonathan Sacks. Rabbi Sacks has a beautiful commentary on the Haggadah. And what he has actually is in two parts. In the beginning of the Haggadah, he actually has like a running commentary on the Haggadah. And then in the back, he has essays. I've actually quoted this to you outside a number of times, but now we're going to see it inside. So remember, he's asking the same idea. Everybody's wondering, why is this the framework for the Haggadah? So look what he writes. Paragraph A. If you want to understand the people, listen to the way it tells its stories. In the literature of humanity, there are many kinds of stories. There are those, we know them from childhood, that end with the words, and they all lived happily ever after. We call them fairy stories, fantasies, myths. In the artificial reality they conjure up, the evil dragon is slain, the wicked witch is defeated, the curse lifted, the conflict resolved. Paragraph B. Beyond myth, there sounds good, right? Sounds very good. Beyond myth, there is a second great literary genre, which we owe to the Greeks, namely tragedy. Tragedy tells the story of human beings with their aspirations and ambitions in a world governed by impersonal forces. To be human is to wish to plan to dream, but our dreams are destined to crash against the rocks of a reality fundamentally indifferent to our existence. They are hubris and are always punished by nemesis. Of course, what he's referring to over here, what is Greek mythology all about? Greek mythology is that mortal man does all of this stuff, and what do the gods do? What do the gods do? They foil the plans of man. Why? What? Just because they can. Just because for them it's fun to go ahead and undermine man and show man how weak he actually is. So again, so remember these are the two stories. So we have myths. So myths end happily ever after. And tragedy says that no matter what you do or how you do it, your efforts will never really come to fruition because at the end of the day, there are just what he calls these impersonal forces that are always working against you. Paragraph C, a tragic universe is a place where bad things happen for no particular reason, where there is no ultimate justice and no expectation of it, where we learn to accept with stoic courage the random cruelties of circumstance. Paragraph D, Judaism has no such stories because it does not believe in myth. In the Jewish narrative, the battle against evil is never complete. The messianic age has not yet come. Until then, we live in a universe in which, though there is liberation from Egypt after Pharaoh comes Amalek, and after Amalek other tyrants, injustice must be fought in every generation. The legacy of the Exodus is not a world in which they all lived happily ever after. There is no closure, no sense of ending. Instead, there is something more real and at the same time more radical. Shabbos, a world of rest, in which temporary, but no less utopian, where one day in 7 weeks experience pure, unmediated freedom and gain the strength to continue the journey to take up the struggle. Paragraph E. There can be no tragedy in Judaism. That is not because there are no disasters, crises, catastrophes. Manifestly, there are. Jewish history often as not has been written in tears. Nor is it because in a Jewish story there is always a happy ending. That, to repeat, is the structure of myth and not Judaism. But there is always hope, grounded hope, justified not by optimism, innocence, or a Whiggish theory that sees history as a constant progress, but by the terms of the covenant between heaven and earth. Judaism is the principled rejection of tragedy in the name of hope. So what Rabbi Sacks writes, and this is so beautiful, is in Judaism, we don't have either of these stories, right? We don't have everyone who lived happily ever after. Remember, we spoke about this by Megillah Esther. And there's not just Megillah Esther. How does the Torah end? How does Zosa Bracha end? Moshe dies. That's a tragic ending, right? So we're used to it already, but that is a tragic. Why is it a tragic ending? Because all Moshe Rabbeinu wanted to do was go into Eretz Yisrael. It was one desire, one wish, and yet he dies. And where does he die? He dies steps away from Eretz Yisrael. So that's not how everyone lived happily ever after. The truth is, you're hard pressed to find a book where everyone lives happily ever after. So we don't have myths. On the other hand, we don't have tragedy. Now, not that we don't have difficult circumstances, we don't have what we call a Greek tragedy. We don't have this idea that bad things happen and it's random and there's no purpose and there's no this, because we endeavor to always find meaning, even in suffering. We may not be able to find the reason. We may not be able to isolate the why, but we absolutely endeavor to try to find meaning. Look at paragraph F. The Pesach story, begin with the shame and end with the praise, is the archetype of Jewish reading of history. Its insistence on rescuing a thread of meaning from catastrophe, its refusal at times heroic to be demoralized by defeat, to give in to the siren call of despair. It is the rejection of myth and tragedy, optimism and pessimism alike. The Jewish narrative does not ask us to believe in a world in which there are simple, happy endings, nor does it allow us to take refuge in the cynical belief that every aspiration ends in failure. Paragraph G. There is nothing peaceful about hope. Far simpler to believe nothing, expect nothing, reconcile oneself to the meaningless of a universe endlessly revolving in silence around the void, and therefore accept the inevitability of fate. Far harder to strive for justice against oppression, freedom against tyranny, knowing that even victory is never final before the end of days, and that until then we must fight the battle in every generation, just as the story of the Exodus must be told every year. Yet to be a Jew is what Levinas calls difficult liberty over easy necessity. Israel, says the Torah, is the people whose name means one who struggles with God, with man who prevails. Far from being simple, naive, hope demands, creates, and is the expression of indomitable moral courage. So what is Rabbi Sacks saying? So there are many things in here, but for our purposes today, he says, Maschil beginus u'mesayim b'shevach is the story of the Jewish people. There are difficult times, and there are good times. But you see, what's interesting is, Rabbi Sacks would say that Maschil beginus u'mesayim b'shevach is not just a one-time thematic overtone, but rather that is the fabric and the framework of the Jewish continuity. Meaning, there's genus, and there's shevach. And then what? And then there's genus, and there's more shevach. And then there's more genus, and more and that is the story of the Jewish dynamic. That if you want to know what our people is all about, when we sit here at the Seder, and this is so incredibly amazing, because the truth is, the Seder, you have to understand, what's very important to know, is that the Seder throughout history was a difficult time for the Jew. See, we live in unparalleled times. We live in times of prosperity, we live in times of freedom, meaning we live in a time where sometimes it's almost difficult to remember that you're in Galus. It's almost difficult to remember that, especially in a community like we live in, Baruch Hashem. But you have to understand that historically for the Jew, so remember, imagine a Jew 100 years ago, 200 years ago, 1,000 years ago. What happened around Pesach time? What inevitably happened around Pesach time? Blood libels. Pesach historically was a time, Pesach Easter season was a time of unparalleled anti-Semitism, pogroms, blood libels. So the Jews sitting down to the Seder had to worry about who was going to knock at the door, what was going to happen. And now throughout this, you want me to feel free? Rabbi Sacks says, so what did the Baal HaGadah do? Maschil beginus u'mesayim b'shevach. Yes, it's difficult now. It's difficult to understand, but you know what? It was difficult thousands of years ago for our ancestors in Egypt also. But you know, look what happened to them. They were redeemed. And the story of our people is that no matter how difficult the circumstances may be, redemption always comes. Now, the difficult part is that yes, we experience redemption, but that redemption is not complete. And so most probably, difficulty will once again arise. If you think we're out of the woods, we're not. We're now out of the woods of difficulty and tragedy and despair until the Melech HaMashiach comes. And until then, our life will be a constant cycle of Ginus Shevach, Ginus Shevach, Ginus Shevach. But just keep on holding on to the hope. Because hope reminds us that no matter how difficult the Ginus, the difficult times may be, Shevach, salvation is sure to come. And even though it's only temporal salvation, even though it's incomplete salvation, but every little bit of incomplete salvation brings us one step closer to ultimate and complete messianic salvation. So now let's bring this all together. So it begins again as a very simple statement in the Mishnah, as Maschil beginus Messiah b'Shavach, that ultimately again we begin the Haggadah with the degradation, the negative parts, and end on the high parts. We see teaches us so many incredible lessons about Pesach, the Seder experience, and lessons about ourselves. So first of all, we saw again, just to review everything, so we saw a fundamental dispute between Rav and Shmuel. What is the major freedom that we are celebrating on this night of the Seder? So is it spiritual freedom? Is it physical freedom? And the answer is both. That's why we include ultimately both of these sections in the Haggadah. We celebrate our physical emancipation and our spiritual emancipation. We then saw again Rav Shurkin, who explained that this is just the normal paradigm, the normal framework for expressing thanks. Whenever you give thanks to God, you must first speak about the difficult times and ultimately again speak about the good times afterwards. That paradigm, that framework, is borrowed from Bikurim. We then saw the Maharshal and the Taz, who explained that this framework is necessary. Why? To keep us humble. To keep us humble, you can get carried away with your newfound freedom. Therefore, keep yourself humble by remember our humble beginnings. We saw Rav Soloveitchik, quoted by Rabbi Ganak, who explained that Maschil Beginus Messiah B'Shevach reminds us that we were chosen. Why were we chosen by HaKadosh Baruch Hu? It was a chesed from the Ribono Shel Olam. And before we begin to relive and recreate the miracles of the Leil HaSeder, we must remind ourselves, remind the next generation, remind all those who are joining us for the Pesach Seder, that it is a privilege to be part of the chosen people. Not always easy, not always a walk in the park, but a privilege nevertheless. We saw the next approach, Rabbi Lahu explained that in general, in order to appreciate your life blessings, you need contrast. In order to appreciate light, you need to have a frame of reference of darkness. To appreciate Shevach, redemption, you need to have a frame of reference, ultimately, of difficulty. We saw the Beis Halevi and the Maggid of Kashinitz, who explained that Maschil Beginus Messiah B'Shevach is not just important for the story of the narrative of the Exodus, but rather, it's an important theme in the personal narrative as well. Mitchila Ovdei Avodah Zarah Avoseinu. Avraham Avinu wasn't Ovdei Avodah Zarah, and yet at the age of 40, he decided he wanted to live life differently, and he became one of the greatest men to ever walk on the face of this earth. Therefore, says the Maggid of Kashinitz, in my own personal story of redemption, lest I think that I'm lost, it's too late, I'm too old, I'm beyond repair, lest I think that I'm not salvageable, if Avraham Avinu was salvageable, then ultimately what? I am salvageable as well. And here's according to the Beis Halevi and the Maggid of Kashinitz, so Maschil Beginus means, even if your personal story starts with degradation, even if the first couple of chapters of your story are not all that noteworthy, even if the first couple of chapters of your life story are not all that great, I have a choice about how my personal narrative ends. Even though it's Maschil Beginus, even though my biography doesn't begin all that beautifully, I choose how it ends. It could be Messiah B'Shevach. It could end on an incredible high. And lastly, Rabbi Sachs teaches us that this paradigm is important for our national consciousness. That Maschil Beginus Messiah B'Shevach means that there will be good times and there will be difficult times. That is just the nature of our existence. And our goal as a people is to always remember that no matter how difficult times may be, salvation, albeit incomplete, will always come. Maschil Beginus, no matter how difficult things are, you'll see at the end of the day, Messiah B'Shevach, it'll work out. Maybe not the way you want, maybe not how you want, maybe not when you want, but there will always be some type of positive conclusion. And says Rabbi Sachs, we say this on the night of the Seder, why? Because, you know, if there's one thing we know it, is that when we finish the Seder, you know, we're on a high, it's beautiful, we're singing Shira Shirim, but there's one thing the neshama knows in the back, in the deep recesses, which is what? There's more challenge to come. there's one thing we know, there's more challenge to come. And I don't just mean that there's a second Seder, right? There's more challenge to come. There really is. Like, we know that there are still going to be difficulties, because, you know, it's an amazing thing. You know, we think that every single thing that happens, we think that we've seen, like, the worst of it. We think we've always seen the worst of it. And then the truth is something else happens, and we realize that that was even worse than I thought before. And that's just going to be the reality until the Melech HaMashiach comes. There is challenge ahead. But the Leil HaSeder is when we gird ourselves with strength. And we tell ourselves, and we tell one another, we tell HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you know what? We are in this for the long haul. We have staying power. We have resilience. And most importantly, we have hope. Because you know that no matter how difficult the circumstances may be, we will come through. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we know that for every difficult circumstance, you will provide us with a temporary salvation. And we know that one day, hopefully soon, it will no longer be a temporary salvation, but in Meretz Hashem, it will be an eternal salvation. It will be the salvation that dries our tears. It will be the salvation, ultimately, again, that will take away all of our pain. And we should be zocha that in Meretz Hashem, in the merit of preparing for the Leil HaSeder, because the truth is, sometimes we get so caught up in the details of preparing for Pesach. And I say this especially to a group of women who I'm sure are neck deep into preparing for Pesach, that sometimes we get so caught up with all the preparations that we forget that, by the way, this is actually a spiritual experience, right? This is actually supposed to move us to our very core. So it's important that we prepare for this night. It's important that we come to the Seder again, hopefully being able to take a deep breath. I'm not going to say relaxed because that might be a little bit too much, but hopefully again with an open heart and an open mind and an open soul. And hopefully living and understanding the dynamic of Ma'aseh Rabbeinu Mesayim B'Shevach. And we should hope that in the message of internalizing these ideas, you know, I always bring my children to the door every year by Shvo Chamasa. Before we open the door, I tell them, I said, you know, before we open it, you have to believe with all of your heart that Eliyahu HaNavi might be here. You have to believe it. It doesn't matter that he wasn't here last year. And it doesn't matter that he hasn't come the previous 2,000 years. Before you open that door, you have to believe that he's going to be there. But if he's not there, you can't be disappointed. You could be a little bit disappointed. But if he's not there, you just have to promise yourself to redouble your efforts to do whatever is necessary to bring him. And I would suggest you do the same. Open the door with, or before you open the door, open it with unbridled confidence and optimism that maybe Eliyahu HaNavi is going to be standing on the other side, smiling back, telling you that the end is here, the good way. Mashiach is here. You could dry your tears. You commend the broken heart. And halavai, we should all be zocha, not just to a maschil beginusu mesayim b'shavach, but we should all be zocha to a maschil b'shavach. We should all be zocha to have happy beginnings and a miratz Hashem, beautiful endings.
Ladies, I just wanted to tell you about